So the other day, one of the lean managers at a fairly major company came to me and said, "I just want you to know that for years we've been trying to get people to do their A3s. We've been trying to get people to do their Kaizen events. We've been trying to get people to analyze things in these various ways or measure this or measure that. The only thing we've been reliably able to get people to do is personal Kanban."
Hi, everybody. I'm Elizabeth Swan.
And I'm Tracy O'Rourke.
And we are from GoingSixSigma.com, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast, where we bring you fabulous apps, polls, news, books, and people so you can build your problem-solving muscle.
Oh, no, Elizabeth, there's a line, and I didn't get coffee yet.
You'd think we had some pull here, Tracy.
Maybe they don't recognize us.
Okay, let's ditch the wigs. Let's get some coffee and head into the private dining room.
Okay, Elizabeth, I already know this is a great episode, but remind our listeners about what's coming.
You're right, Tracy. This episode is jam-packed with goodies. Most exciting is today's special, which is your interview with Jim Benson, the co-author of Personal Kanban. Great book, great tool, great interview. For the appetizer, we'll review the time-tracking app called Toggle. In the news, we'll find out how the Army uses Lean Six Sigma to get mission ready. And for the printed page, we'll review Jim Benson's book, Personal Kanban, and find out how to reduce your existential overload, those weighty to-do lists that wake us up early, early in the morning. And that is good news for everybody.
Yes. And remember to stay tuned for this month's coupon code in order to get a discount on GoLeanSixSigma.com's online training.
Let's get to the appetizer.
So what do you think of Toggle, Elizabeth?
I thought it was pretty cool. And for those of you that have not heard about it, Toggle is a free time tracking app. It's a Google Chrome extension. In most businesses, it's often helpful to figure out how long it actually takes to do something. Like freelancers can use it, something like this, to track billable time. In the process improvement world, this is a good way to get process time metrics. I was thinking of this last week when you and I were working on with a client on a swim lane map, and we were estimating work time, and somebody asked about, what about jobs that get interrupted? Like, how do you track those? And this was an example, I think it was engineers doing designs, and they had clients that they had to go back to for questions. So they'd be in the middle of a design, and they would stop, and they would have to get a question answered. And so while they're waiting for a response, then they had to start another design. And they went back and forth, sometimes between five different designs. And these guys said, well, how would you track that? And this is the kind of app that you could just turn on and off. You could label the project and say, okay, I'm working on design A. And as soon as you had to stop to get a question answered, you could stop it. So I thought that would be a pretty cool answer to their question. In that particular situation, I was interested in, well, how often do you get interrupted? What are those questions that you have to stop the design for to go ask? And could you front load those? Couldn't you get those answered up front? Anyway, that was a separate issue. But within GoLeanSixSigma.com, we've been trying to get a handle on how long it takes to do different tasks. So that would allow us to schedule more effectively. Like, how long is it going to take me to do this so I know where to slot it in my calendar? Including, how long does it take to prep for the podcast? So I timed it, Tracy.
And what do you think? Do you think there's some room for improvement?
There's always room for improvement. I was thinking, oh, it's only 4 hours. And I thought, well, that doesn't include, you know, reading a book, writing a book review, recording podcasts, reaching out to folks to see, you know, for interviews. So what did you think?
Well, I really like this because people do want to do time studies often, and they don't have an effective way to actually track time. And so this is a great tool. It allows you to track time by many ways, however you want, really, by project, by team, by workspace, by a client, by a task, or you can actually set up a tag and it'll track the time for you. It's the number one time tracking tool right now on Google. It's got 70,000 users and growing. It's very secure. So it's on the Google iCloud platform, and it meets many ISO security standards. And it supports a long list of productivity apps like Asana, Slack, Trello, and Google Drive. So they're really making a name for themselves because this is something that people have needed for a long time, and they make it easy. It took one click for me to start tracking, which is awesome.
Yeah, very cool. And we had One of our staff, Kelvin, was trying it and he loved it because he was trying to get a handle on how long it took him to do tasks. And it gave him a baseline, which of course, knowing Kelvin, he just did better on it, right? So it spurred him on. But that's pretty cool. We're all trying to get a handle on it. And that was great.
I'm Tracy O'Rourke and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast.
Up next, it's Lean Six Sigma in the news. Okay, Tracy, tell us about the Pacific Command. How did Lean Six Sigma help them get mission ready?
So this was a really interesting article. It was found, as you said, in Pacific Command. It was written by Major Charles Fife, and it's about the Army improving operational readiness for watercraft tugs, and they've made some significant improvements, up to 40%. So these tugs, they're modular warping tugs, for those of that might have an interest in the kind of tug it was.
What does that mean, modular warping tug?
I don't know. I think they're very specific. They're needed, apparently, to support the modular causeway system, which includes the Trident Pier and discharge facilities. And this effort, this improvement effort, was a collaboration between the 7th Transportation Brigade and strategic partners in the Pacific region, primarily Army Field Support Battalion, Northeast Asia. The problem was that two tugs need to be mission ready at all times, and they weren't meeting that. So they wanted to follow the DMAIC process. They found some key root causes like long maintenance times and the fact that some parts were unavailable when they were needed. And those were the things that they addressed as part of this project. So the improvements that the team made resulted in an increase in operational readiness rate, 40%, and more importantly, they reduced the non-availability time of these tugs from 48 hours to only 4. Mission ready. Nice work.
Yeah. And Tracy, I know you've done work with the armed forces, and you said mission readiness is often a very common metric.
Yes, absolutely. You know, so they have to be ready. If something happens, if some emergency happens, how ready are we to respond to that? And I've had other organizations, the Air Force, where being mission ready was critical. And I said, well, what kind of mission? And I think I'd said this before. And he said, well, I can't tell you, otherwise I have to kill you.
Well, I'm glad he didn't tell you, Tracy, because then I wouldn't be able to do the podcast with you.
Right.
That would be sad.
Yes.
Well, that's cool. I mean, it's the ultimate effectiveness measure for the armed forces, right? Being mission ready. Very cool. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Elizabeth Swan, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. In a short while, we'll get to hear Tracy's interview with Jim Benson, consultant, speaker, and co-author of Personal Kanban. But first, it's the printed page.
So, Elizabeth, you took this book to heart, didn't you? Or should I say you took it to your bulletin board?
I did. I took it to my bulletin board. Thank you. So this book is Personal Kanban, and the subtitle is Mapping Work, Navigating Life. And that subtitle speaks volumes. It really does exactly that. And I actually saw Jim and Tony Ann, his co-author, at a workshop at an LEI conference in Carlsbad, California. We were both there a little over a year ago, and he totally sold me on the idea of a personal Kanban. So I've been operating one for a while, although reading the book, I realized a bunch of mistakes I made, so I upped my game, which was also really helpful. So I'm going to start with the idea behind a work Kanban, and this is Kanban is attributed to Taichi Ono of the Toyota Production System, and it translates to signboard, billboard, visual board. It's just a visual sign. It could be electronic, it could be physical. It lets people know that it's time to reorder material or create a product or service. Take a step. It's part of just-in-time manufacturing. It helps with the concept of pull, the idea that you don't start a task until it's time, right? Until the task before that has already been completed. So the Kanban board is based on that concept. It's a visual board, and it has three columns. There's to do, or ready. There's doing, what's being worked on. And done, what's completed. And you pull tasks through the board to completion. This is also a foundational piece of the Agile system, which is used by software developers. Then they can see what software modules are waiting to be done, what's done, who's doing it, what stage it's at. And these boards can change in complexity and have a lot more columns, which these authors do a good job of describing. But Jim and his co-author, Tony and DiMaria, they took this concept and they created something called the personal Kanban. So it's using the Kanban board to replace your to-do list. And it's amazing how simply taking tasks that are in your head, which they use the term existential overload, which I totally get at 3 a.m., and putting them on paper, because it completely changes how you view your work. You see the tasks. So it's an incredibly readable book. They provide lots of examples and options for the way you can set up the boards. It's an easy read. They're really funny. And I obviously brought it into my own workspace, and it's made my life a lot more manageable. Just seeing those tasks go from, you know, ready, doing, and done. I think there's a phrase where he says putting it in the done pile is like brain candy, like the act of just dragging it over the line. What do you think, Tracy?
So what I think is amazing about this personal Kanban concept is I have seen clients recommend reading it to their employees and then have this concept spread like wildfire. And it's visible, it's visual. So everybody's got their Kanban boards. And it was really intriguing to me that the challenges that most people face with change management and people not wanting to change and resistance, it's almost like it didn't apply here. It didn't exist. Everybody had one. I'd walk around and there were some sections that every single person had a Kanban board and they loved using it. And that was really intriguing to me about a new concept and trying it and liking it and wanting to try it. And so to me, it seems very transformative. And we're going to talk about that with Jim, I think, because it's very interesting. That just blew my mind. The other thing is we have a friend, Colleen Kindler, and she was telling us that her daughter uses the Kanban board for her homework. And she would have, a task that she would have to do by week. And she would move them across the board. And guess what? She's now headed to the University of Wisconsin.
And she got a scholarship, and it's all due to the Kanban board.
Yeah, exactly. Now that's pretty good. That's definitely a return on investment.
Exactly. It's also so simple. I think the fact that it's post-it notes on a board and you just use a Sharpie pen, like that makes it tactile and simple and kind of satisfying, just moving those things. That's cool.
Remember to read the full review on our website. It's time to announce the coupon code.
This code is for 20% off any of our Lean Six Sigma training and certification courses, white belt, yellow belt, green belt, black belt, and lean training.
If you've joined us at the Just In Time Cafe, just use coupon code 20 cold brew. That's 20 COLDBREW during checkout. Make sure to use it soon though, since the coupon code will expire on June 15th.
Coming up next is today's special. Tracy, can you give us a little preview of your interview with Jim Benson?
Absolutely. So Jim has written a few books, but he says that Personal Kanban is his bestseller by 10 times the number of his other books. And we're going to get a chance to talk with him about what Personal Kanban is and why this particular tool is so transformative. He has some really good stories to share. You're listening to the Just In Time Cafe. I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and today joining me is Jim Benson. Jim is the CEO of Modus Cooperandi, co-founder of the Modus Institute, and creator of the technique Personal Kanban, and author of the Shingo Award-winning book of the same name, Personal Kanban, that Jim co-authored with Tony Ann DiMaria. Welcome, Jim. Thanks for coming to the cafe.
It's my pleasure.
So any interesting personal fact you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I don't know how interesting it is, but I love food, all food. And Tony Ann and I get kind of the luxury of being able to travel all over the world every year, and I get to eat all the best food. So if anybody out there has a need for a restaurant recommendation in almost every major city on earth, I think I can probably provide you at least with what I liked.
Very nice. It's amazing you're not 300 pounds.
Yeah, it's I am currently 1.5 pounds above what my doctor has called my max weight. Uh-huh. So I'm trying my best not to do that. It's hard.
Yes, it is. I agree with you. Traveling and being resisting good food everywhere is difficult to do.
Very.
So we would love to talk about one of your books. You have three books out. Is it three books that you have or is it more?
Yeah, there's four.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we are really here to talk about your book, Personal Kanban. Would you say that has been the most popular book that you've written?
Yes, by a factor of 10.
Wow. That's great. Yep. So I'd love to, you know, share with our audience what Personal Kanban is and a little bit more about why maybe people need it. So I'll just say that you wrote on your website, Personal Kanban is about choosing the right work at the right time. Mm-hmm. So tell us, what is Personal Kanban in a nutshell and why do people need it?
Okay. In the podcasting nutshelliest of nutshells, Personal Kanban, it has two rules: to visualize your work because you can better manage what you can see, and to limit your work in progress because you can't do more work than you can handle. Most of us manage our projects blind and do way too much work at once. So what we did was very simply put a value stream on a wall, which has the simplest value stream possible is options, doing and done, stuff you haven't done, stuff you're working on, and stuff that is complete. And then you pull your work through that doing column or those doing columns if you've got a more verbose value stream. And you have a hard limit on the things that you can be doing at a time. We recommend 3 for individuals just because it's a good cognitive number. And the goal of it is to reduce cognitive load, to make it clear the relationships of the options that you have, to create an environment where you can focus, finish, and then fine-tune your work at the end.
So how has something so simple been so transformative?
Oh, my God. I've been doing this for over a decade, and every day something happens where I go, oh, I can't believe you did that. it is like the greatest thing ever for both being like super egomaniac and then also for being super humble.
Uh-huh.
The two quick stories, I guess, to bookend this, mm-hmm. is at the very beginning, we got a email from a woman who lived in Pennsylvania who had a father who did everything for her and her sisters. He became very ill. He was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer of pretty much everything. And the sisters kind of all freaked out, not because they weren't capable people, but because their relationship with their dad, you know, the system of their family, if you will, he was the one who fixed everything. He was the one who did everything. So they took his treatment plan, put it into the options column of a Personal Kanban. And then they looked at it and they're like, wow, that is awful. I don't want to do any of that, but it's just stuff to do. So they were able to externalize the work. It became less threatening. And then they were able to focus on their dad and the work at hand. So it's a super personal side of that. And we work a lot with teachers and parents and therapists, doctors who have used Personal Kanban to work with kids. It's amazing to watch it with kids. But then on the other side of it, we're about to do a series of interviews ourselves with people. It's called Powered by Personal Kanban. And so far we have banks, theme parks, fire departments, hospitals, schools, obviously software companies, insurance, blah, 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 blah. We've come up with currently 14 entirely different verticals. But some of the more amusing for me are theme parks and fire departments. So there's in Michigan, there is a whole city full of fire departments that are entirely run on Personal Kanban.
Did you think that it was going to be this revolutionary when you wrote the book? I mean, we all want that, right?
That's what this is. Yes, I wanted it to be that vision, that revolutionary. But what we honestly thought at the beginning was that it was going to go in two places, that people would just kind of use it at their desks quietly. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is that it would probably be used in software a lot because that was kind of where we first laid Post-it note to whiteboard, if you will. So the other day, one of the lean managers at a fairly major company came to me and said, I just want you to know that for years we've been trying to get people to do their A3s. We've been trying to get people to do their Kaizen events. We've been trying to get people to analyze things in these various ways or measure this or measure that. The only thing we've been reliably able to get people to do is Personal Kanban.
Wow. One of the things you said, there's two rules, limiting work in process. And you know, I love your book because you mention some stories that I think stood out for me about your dog, your dog Cookie when you were a kid. And, you know, how many Cocoa Puffs can you throw in the air and how many is the dog going to catch? You know, and then you also have the story in there about a juggler with 9 torches in the air and he actually burns himself. And so it's this idea of this limiting your whip. So why is that so important? How does one do that in a nutshell?
in a nutshell, yeah. So the limiting your whip is right up there with sticking to your diet as a thing, right? But the thing is that you can't improve a system that is actively overloading itself. The individuals in the system will not have the capacity to engage in continuous improvement, and the system itself can't withstand the continuous improvement. So at some point, somebody needs to pull the lever and slow the line down, whether it's a cognitive line, whether it's a collaborative line, whether it's a literal assembly line. Your takt time cannot exceed your ability to create quality product. Politically and personally, it is nearly impossible for us to limit our work in progress because we're all going squirrel, 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 squirrel. And those squirrels are all like running around with like $1,000 bills taped to their back.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be able to grab one squirrel and harvest that $1,000 bill, but we're all grabbing for all of them and getting nothing, right? And so for us, like initially that we're talking about just limit what you're doing right now. Just slow down and limit what you're doing right now. But then that obviously works its way, you know, that concept scales. So your team shouldn't be doing more than it can handle. The section of your company shouldn't be doing more than it can handle, and your corporation the same way. So getting corporations to only have a few goals, getting corporations to understand that if they do just a few things at a time, they'll finish something, they'll realize the ROI on it faster, and then they can move on to another something. They don't have to have year-long projects. So that year-long projects drive me crazy, that big batch thing.
Yes. And so it seems simple, right? Why? And you even wrote a book about it. So I'm guessing that people really struggle with this concept of actually doing it, right? So you wrote Why Limit Whip. And I was wondering, you know, is it different for everyone? You know, scheduling, what if you say start with 2 or 3 items that you're actually working with?
Well, from the individual standpoint, you have people who have varying controls over what work they receive, the rate they receive it at, how they can communicate up and downstream the impacts of that rate or that style of receipt. It's awesome. Like being on a Six Sigma podcast means I don't have to explain any of that. That's kind of fun. It's like ultimate shorthand here. So you have transactional work, you have responsive work, you have inventive work, you have creative work, you have iterative work, you have there's all these different styles and kinds of work. And in both Lean and Six Sigma, we focus a lot on the handoffs. But we don't as a group, as business process people in general, we don't focus enough on the other side of that, which isn't the handoff, but at the hand-ins, the collaborative moments. You know, when we build value streams and we start looking at the things, I just start drawing silos above and, you know, each of the post-it notes in the value stream and say, okay, well, you've got 62 awesome silos here. I'm so glad that we're able to divide all this up. Now, where can we actually work together? And what I find is that when you get people to start working together, the environment allows the limiting of work in progress naturally.
I see. So that was actually one of my next questions was, how has personal Kanban affecting morale, or how does it affect morale, and how does it drive successful cultural change in office environments? And so what you're saying is this idea of silos and, you know, really starting to work together because there's a limit of whip can really increase morale.
every so often the world gives you gifts. and last December, I received a big one, literally made me like cry. So we're working with a very large construction company, with Turner Construction in New York. And we are using personal Kanban to build buildings, big buildings, like buildings of 750 million to $1.6 billion price tags. And at one point in that process, in the giant value stream of building a building, they have something called a procurement department. And the people in the procurement department have to spend all that money, usually in somewhere between 12 and 16 weeks. So I walk in and I put a pile of $1.6 billion on your desk, and you have to go hire all of the subcontractors. You have to buy all the steel. You have to buy all the cabinets, everything that goes into this building. So as you can imagine, that's a lot of work in a very short period of time. So we're working on this particular project. We have a nice Obeya room set up, and there's a beautiful Kanban on the wall, and there's all these tickets. And all of the HR people from this multinational company descend upon the New York office for a little conference, and they stop by one day to see the Obeya room. So Kevin Chase, who's the procurement agent on this particular project, who is my hero, he's standing in front of the room, and he's basically saying, this is how we use the board, this is how the things flow, blah, 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 blah. And one of the HR people said, Kevin, does this affect your work-life balance? And all of the HR people go, ha ha, HR question. And that was kind of funny. And then Kevin kind of laughs, and he says, you know, I work here. Nothing's going to impact my work-life balance. So it's like, I've got to spend all this money in like 16 weeks. There's no way I can just do that. But he says, but here's what happens. He said, before this board, I sat at my desk and I did my work. I never talked to the operations team except for maybe weekly or maybe more than weekly, or less than weekly meetings. Those meetings were always going over a spreadsheet. He said, if something went wrong, things are moving too fast. I never could tell anybody. I just had to kind of fix it and hope that the fix worked well. Because this is such high stakes stuff, that's a lot of pressure on all of these decisions that I make. He said, so on this board right now, everybody sees when something's in peril. When my boss or any of the other people up and down the chain see that something's in peril, they know it immediately, and we can talk about it immediately. So since we started using the board, I talk to the operations team every day.
Wow.
I sit with them every day. So the level of collaboration between procurement and operations, literally five times, if not more, what it was before. So probably 20, 30, 40 times what it was before, because going from just a status meeting to actually working together is a huge thing. So then Kevin said this. He said, so this does not impact my work-life balance. It does impact my quality of life, and it helps me act with confidence.
Wow.
And I was just like, yeah.
Wow. That must have made you feel great.
Well, and part of it was because it was like, it's working, you know, look at that, it's working. But the other thing was to hear it eloquently said by someone who was directly benefiting from it and frankly had every reason in the world to say, this adds a lot of work to me and I don't want to touch it, and they're just making me do it and whatever. But I didn't put those words in his mouth. So hearing it understood was ridiculously powerful. And so the interesting thing now is, because we can't see beyond the office that we're working with in this huge company, we didn't know how it was spreading throughout the rest of the organization. So I was at a conference last week, and all these other people from other parts of the company were coming up saying, hey, we're doing the thing that you guys started doing up there. And it was... I don't know. That was, I guess, the second part is that you said cultural change. It's actually spread beyond an office where we thought we were isolated.
Because they saw success, and probably they wanted what he had with that board.
Yep.
Very nice. I love that story, by the way. Thanks for sharing that. That was awesome.
You're welcome.
So did you actually cry?
I hate to say it, but not bawling, but certainly teared up and visibly moved.
That's so awesome. I love those stories. I love the stories in the work that we do, right? In process improvement, continuous improvement,
you know, it's those are the moments that really stand out. So that's awesome. So I have a question for you. You're a busy guy. You're on the road a lot. How do you bring your personal Kanban board with you?
In a variety of ways. The first is Modus, my company. Then we have our classes, our online classes. And then we have the work that we're doing with our clients. And then we have other products that we're building. And so all of those things in one way or another need to be managed both as discrete units and overall. At the same time, I'm a human being, and when you take a human being and you put it on a plane a lot, it starts to become forgetful. You know, you lose track of what day it is, who you're supposed to get things for and stuff. So we have a variety of boards. Actually, if you look at any of my laptops, my laptop ends up becoming a board. There's like post-it notes stuck in like different parts of my laptop. And any hotel room I end up in, I don't think I've ever left a hotel room without a post-it note still stuck on something. Then the board itself for an individual or for a team is only as valuable, only valuable if you look at it. A non-visual visual radiator is worthless. So even though we have boards in LeanKit and Trello and other things floating around out there for various projects, if we don't have huddles at regular intervals and those huddles have to demand that you're looking at the board, then the board is very quickly out of sight, out of mind. So I will have a board in Trello, and I will actually, when I leave, I will pull a bunch of things into my own doing column, which would normally break a WIP limit. But what that is it's an indication that Jim understands that he should be doing these things while he's running around. And then the next time I bring up the board, I can move the things to done that get done. But we have product style boards, which actually the tickets are the object of value. Mm-hmm. So for an online class, that would be like, you know, the actual videos. Mm-hmm. Or we also have task-based boards, which is kind of like the traditional personal Kanban, which is options doing and done. And it's just the tasks that move through it. But we have to be diligent because we are an intentionally understaffed company. Yep. which means that we're constantly saying, should I work on this project, or should I do this accounting, or should I do this, or should I do that?
Yes. Well, I will say we practice personal Kanban. So Go Lean Six Sigma is a virtual team. We are a small team like your organization. We are completely, there's two people in Hawaii, one in San Diego, one in Las Vegas, and one in Cape Cod. So we love Trello, and we have really...
And the sun, apparently.
Exactly. When you can live anywhere, you pick pretty cool places. So we love Trello. We love the Kanban. We call it the team board. And we've got various boards. And you're right. We have huddles around these boards regularly. And we also have sort of reminders. So... You know, if you know, we put due dates on everything, and then you can actually clean out the cards if there's late dates, and then you can move the dates. And so we love it. It's very effective for us, and we really enjoy it. I don't know if you were a fan of Trello. It sounds like you use it.
We use it.
Yes. And for virtual teams, it's a great solution. It could be a great strategy.
Yeah, it has a... I mean, what I like about Trello is that it's super simple, so you can just throw something up and start working with it. It doesn't provide you with any statistics. It doesn't have swim lanes. It doesn't allow you to build complex boards at all. But as far as like, you know, getting together a group of people and needing to get something done right now, it's the simplest thing to use out there.
Yes. So we're almost out of time here, but I wanted to talk with you just in case our audience wants to hear about your two other books that you've written, Why Plans Fail. And we did talk a little bit about the other book, Why Limit WIP. So can you tell us a little bit more about those two?
Sure. So Why Plans Fail is a book about the psychology of work. If people have read Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, it is a more succinct version of that in a way. It's kind of half business novel and half not. True story, I was just finishing the last edits when Thinking Fast and Slow was published. And I was like, oh no. And so then I had to like put it off a month and then go in and put all these references to Thinking Fast and Slow, even though I didn't have it, because those people were like, you totally stole from Kahneman. I was like,
oh.
So that was That was hilarious in air quotes. But the nice thing about it is it takes behavioral psychology and it puts it firmly in a business context. Mm-hmm. Why Plans Fail is it has like 6 or 7 sections, and it takes some specific cognitive biases and it shows how those play out in the office. And that's important for our profession because we tend to fall into rational actor thought a lot. And we don't recognize that there are propensities for people to think in certain ways, especially when they're doing A3s, that are very harmful for finding the actual root causes. For Why Limit Whip, it follows a guy named Randall through a intolerable work situation into a much more tolerable work situation, and how he and the people that he worked with created strategies and coping mechanisms to actually limit their work in progress. I'm quite proud of that book. I like it a lot. It's been a harder sell because it's more esoteric, but it's a short book, and I don't know. I would be very pleased if more people read it because I think it's been effective when I've used it with clients.
Well, I'm going to read that one next. Okay. So you got one more person reading that book.
Yay! There you go.
So is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience today that I didn't ask you about, Jim?
So one of the things that you and I were talking about before we started the interview was that for years, there's been kind of like this attempt at process wars in one way or another. So we've got like lean thingies, and we've got Six Sigma thingies, and we've got Scrum thingies, and we've got, you know, all these different, you know, ways to manage work, Prince 2 and whatnot. But in the end, all work is done by individuals in teams to produce value. We tend to create business processes to produce value. Sometimes we pay attention to the teams. We almost never pay attention to the individuals. That means that almost all the processes that we ever create end up being sub-optimized, because not only can we overload people, but people can get overly excited and just take on too much work because it's interesting, because it's fun, because it's what they waited their whole lives to do. So as coaches, as process people, we need to watch out for the kind of the whip health, if you will, of individuals. And you can't tell people stop doing that. But what we can do is we can kind of see like what are the levers that we can change either in the value stream or in the collaborative nature of the organization. So if people start to get overloaded, don't necessarily immediately go to like limit their whip limit, but ask them and yourselves, what of those things that you're working on could you work on with somebody else? Mm-hmm. And you'll get an exponential quality increase from that because they're focusing better and they have to explain it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So that's my big thing. It personal Kanban feels like an individual thing for me, but it's totally a collaborative tool.
Yes. Wonderful. So where are you spending your time these days, Jim? You're running all over the place. I mean, you told me you were going to be gone for 3 weeks. You've got a lot of stuff going on.
Yep.
How much of that work is personal Kanban versus other things?
That's the thing, is like personal Kanban is kind of my Trojan horse. People are like, we'd like a box of personal Kanban, and then I show up and then good management actually pops out.
Right. Uh-huh.
They're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. The upcoming is I'm in New York for a week, and then I'm in San Luis Obispo for a week. And then first I'm going to Leavenworth, Washington for a few days. So that's kind of those 2.5 weeks. Then I'm home to change my clothes. And then it's Iowa and New York again. So yeah, I told you.
Do you suffer for the same thing as I do? You wake up and you go, where am I?
That's where am I? So my parents, whenever they call now, they actually start with, where are you? even though they have Facebook, they should be able to follow that. But every year we will touch every continent. That's happened since 2010.
Wow. That's great. So how can people find you? What's the best way to find you?
Probably the best way to find us is on the personalkanban.com. website.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate you coming to the cafe to talk with me and make me laugh and share some great stories. Thank you so much, Jim.
Yeah, Tracy, my pleasure.
Don't forget to check out our latest success story. Kristen Kielik of UC San Diego saved 2,000 hours a year in the employee onboarding process. Great story. Sign up for next week's webinar, How to Make the Swim Lane Map Work for You. And remember to tune in to our next podcast episode where Tracy interviews Danielle Hintz, Chief Procurement Officer of King County, Washington.
And did you know that Elizabeth and I just wrote an ebook? It's the Problem Solver's Toolkit, a surprisingly simple guide to your Lean Six Sigma journey. It just came out on Amazon and it's free with green belt or black belt training. You can also order it on our site. Check it out. We are super excited about it.
We're authors now, Tracy.
Woohoo! We get to talk about our own book now.
That's right. We should. Next podcast. Thanks for hanging with us at the Just In Time Cafe.
Come back in 2 weeks.